So right now we are start with the talk, Building Inclusive Community by John Lenhart. Yeah. So basically, if you are going to ask any question at the end, please wait for the mic so everything gets recorded.
So. Cool, thank you. Sorry again for the delay. So the format is I have about 30 minutes of material and then we can talk about stuff. If you have any questions in the meantime, please let me know. And again, yeah, I don't know how I've missed the time. My name is Jan Lehnert. I've been doing open source since 1999, CouchDB since 2006, Apache CouchDB since 2008, and I've been the PMC chair and vice president of CouchDB since 2011, and I founded an open source project called Hoodie in 2012, which has nothing to do with the ASF, but has a lot of the things that I, or some of the things that I learned about open source and inclusivity we pioneered, no, not necessarily pioneered, but that's where I learned them, where we brought them together. And I'm also the CEO and co-founder of Neighbor Hoodie Software. We do a lot of fun stuff with CouchDB and Hoodie. If you want to know about that, let me know after the talk. So the basic premise is, and I'm not even citing any sources for this, diverse teams do better work. I don't think there's any discussion about this necessary anymore. The subtext here is non-diverse teams are missing out. So let's see how bad it is with the ASF. This is a graph. All these numbers first are compiled by Noah Slater from a mail on the members list in April 2015. This is a distribution of probabilities of how many women should be among the ASF members from 10 to 200. The basis of this is the number of computer science graduates and the number of women among them in the US. So it's a very limited number. And the number is optimistic. So we say 20% of the computer science majors in the US are women. Given random distribution of people becoming ASF members, how likely is it that so and so many end up here? And the top spot is about 12% probability for about 120 to 130 women in the ASF. Any guesses where the ASF actually is in between 10 and 200? Number of women. We're 20 to 30. And the probability, given completely random distribution or selection of this, as per statistics and everything, is 0.00%. So we know something else is at work why there aren't enough women at the ASF. We don't have any numbers for any of the other underrepresented groups in technology. I know there's a shift within the ASF to address all this. I think most of the people in this room want to work on this. The first thing we need to do is get better. Oh, sorry, do you want to see this one? The first one is we got to get better demographics about how many, and I call them underrepresented people in technology, are part of the ASF, so that we know what we need to work with and who we need to work for. All right, now that we've established that there is a problem, and if you don't believe, just believe the math, how do we get more diverse? Trying to figure this out for a while, with others, of course, we conclude that inclusivity is a prerequisite for diversity. So in other words, if you don't already have a welcoming space where people can do their best work, it doesn't make much sense to invite more people to get in. This is commonly known as the pipeline problem, where people say, we only have so many women coming into tech. The actual problem is tech is so bad that most women leave. That's the problem that we have to address first. It's not that we... I think it's a measure of, like, a question of priorities. It's less... we have to do one, but not the other. But we have to do this one first before we open the spigot to get more people in. And we can work on both things concurrently. So when we're there, that everything lines up. But from a logical perspective, we need to do this first. So this is the absolute baseline. Do not start without this. Have a code of conduct. And again, I don't think any discussion here. The important bit about the code of conduct is the enforcement bit. So if somebody violates the code of conduct, like with this event, be prepared to show them the door, no refunds. It doesn't matter how good and how prolific of a contributor they are, it doesn't matter if they're a director of the ASF, it doesn't matter if they're a founder, if they don't think the code of conduct is something they need to adhere to, they have no place among us anymore. CouchDB was the first Apache project to have a code of conduct, and it took about like 2 days or 3 days until Rich said, we should have this for the ASF, and it took a couple of weeks, and then it was that, which, good effort, a good move there. I didn't think the ASF was going to move that fast. So I'm very proud of this. For CouchDB and now for the ASF, of course, John Touzet has done all that work. Let's see. So when you go about changing the world and you're a teenager, you usually think, I'll just go out and tell everyone what the right conclusion for everyone is, and then everybody will follow me. You soon realize that that's just not how this works. The only way we can change the world is change ourselves. So what can we do? And of course, lead by example. There's a bunch of things coming now, but like one of the really simple things that you can do when somebody reports a code of conduct violation, the default behavior should be believing them. And this is off the category. I don't even know why I should say this, but this is actually the case. We usually have, and I'm observing this for myself as well, have a knee-jerk reaction of, they probably didn't mean this, or they're not that mean in person, or you just don't know them really well, or they just wanted to make a joke. Just believe them that there was a bad experience there. At the same time, you don't have to vilify the accused. Like, you don't have to throw them out right away. Like, figure out what it is. Maybe it was an honest misunderstanding. Maybe they were malicious, but see the error of their ways, give them a chance, all that kind of stuff. There's no need to, like, be rash about anything, but do believe in the first place. Next up, when people talk about their experience in open source, and I want to usually say preface this when people, marginalized people in tech, tell you about their experiences, just sit down and listen. Don't put them in context. Don't share your own stories. Don't put their stories in context with your stories. Just sit there and listen. Don't take up so much space. We have enough space for ourselves already. Give other people more space to do this. Most importantly, though, and this is in line with the other point previously, like, don't try to explain away the other people's experiences in the same way. It's like, you just don't know, understand how Git works, or that's just the culture here, or like, no, somebody's like did a bad thing, and now that person is pissed off. That's, listen. All right, okay. Next, I'm very glad that Jim brought this up in the State of the Feather. Be careful with the term meritocracy. The ASF wants it to mean anyone who puts in the work accumulates merit and then gets recognition within projects and gets to decide more things and all this. The problem is, in reality, this means mostly white cis men are able to put in the work in the first place. So not much merit that is universal there. So there's a lot of work to do. But absolutely reward people for the work that they do. Leave the active decision-making to people who show up the work, but we also have to make sure that more people have the chance to show up in the first place. That's kind of the way to solve this. I don't know if the ASF is going to be successful in reclaiming the term meritocracy. If they want to try, that's fine. I don't know if I want to go there yet. But just be careful with when you use it and when people bring up that this may be problematic, that you say you know about this and this is how the ASF thinks about it and so on. All right. So how to make things a little bit more inclusive, more generally. People are the most important thing in an open source project. I'm preaching to the choir here, obviously. The ASF calls it community over code. I call it contributors, not contributions. Actually, Lena calls it that way, but I stole it from her. And this is a little bit at odds with what Jim said of the State of the Feather. He said, it doesn't matter who you are as long as you do the work. And I think that's okay. But I think we don't disagree with the clarification that I'm about to say. When you appreciate people for being part of the project or being committed to the project, instead of the work that they do, whatever it is, you're building stronger and more sustainable bonds with that person. It doesn't mean that you have to be friends with everybody, but it means you have to have, in an HR sense, maybe a professional relationship with someone so that they will be open to telling you, whoa, I've got stress at home, I can't meet my deadline. If they don't talk to you about these things, then they feel shitty because they don't do the things they said they would do, and you're angry at them for not doing the things that they said they do. If you have a trust relationship where they're happy to share some of the personal things that are going on, there's a lot healthier going on, relationship going on. And if you, the rare occasions when you get to meet in person, it's ever so much nicer. So if you focus on the people and appreciate for them being in the project, whatever they do, then I think that's better than saying, it doesn't matter who you are as long as you do the work. Speaking of, well, this just dovetails into, and Jim mentioned this as well, I thought he was really funny when he said, we don't focus on the code, but can also document the code and design around the code and marketing the code and PR the code. So the center is still the code, right? And we do everything around it. I want to put these things next to each other. Here's things that are more than just code, and again, you all know this. This design, documentation, editorial work, I'll come back to this later. End user support, I've done this extensively. Events, user groups, conferences, thank you, Rich. Internationalization, PR and marketing, and all of these things are equally important. Note that code is even on there. Understanding how that these things are important, appreciating people's work in these areas is is how you build better communities. Next one is going to be a little bit cross maybe, but avoid burnout at all cost, and that kind of allows me to discuss a few more other things going down. There's a number of reasons why burnout happens, and Kate Houston has a good summary of those, so I'll just steal these. First one's lack of control. This is why people burn out. In the ASF world, this would be project things in the project happen, and the contributors or even committers don't know why. So maybe there's a decision that happened on the PMC, which leads to a commit or a comment on somewhere, and nobody understands the background of this because the PMC is private. This shouldn't happen as much as possible. So document everything that you're doing. The ASF has a bunch of general purpose guidelines and encourages projects to have bylaws. CatchDB has extensive bylaws that explains how we work, how we make decisions. And of course, it uses the vote and decision-making framework that the ASF developed, but we spell it out again. Here's the type of decision we want to make. If you want to bring that up, just use this. Here's a template for this is the silent... I forgot the different levels now. This is how this decision is made in this community. Of course, there's a few things where this can't be happen. This is more tricky. Of course, personal issues, personnel issues on the that are discussed in the PMC should be private. I still believe that if there's personnel issues on the PMC, it's all private, which is also fun. And of course, security issues, where the nature of the thing just requires you to make an obscure commit first and then explain later why you did it. But that's a very tiny fraction of the things that happen. The next reason for burnout is insufficient reward or merit. The ASF has only four levels of merit, so to say, contribution, committer, PMC member, and ASF member, and these are just not enough levels. Also, when you're a member, you're not done accumulating merit, right? So there's a whole lot more that you could think about how to thank people for their work and for their contribution, and have them run per project, or even if we get to talk on ComDev a little bit, figure out how to make recommendations that can be used ASF-wide. The next one's lack of community, but I pulled that out already. This is the contributors, not contributions bit. The absence of fairness, there's a nice essay from the 60s called The Tyranny of Structurelessness. Any group has a leader, even if the group didn't decide on that leader or makes clear who the leader is, that always happens. So social groups abhor a vacuum, so somebody is always in charge. And if people can't see what the power structure, power dynamics of a group are, they don't perceive actions that happen as fair. The ASF is moderately to pretty good at this. It is meant to be an equal playing field, but there are always people, and more often companies, who are either actively or passively trying to game the system. So be vigilant about this every time. And we have at least one major incident on board and members every year about this, especially with the companies that get lots of venture capital. But sometimes it's just individuals being ignorant and trying to be the guy. I don't know. The next reason for burnout is conflict in values. So if you don't know where your project is going and people disagree on things, this is very stressful to talk about. The way we started fixing this with CouchDB and with Hoodie is a clear mission statement that we discuss every year, or continuously. Maybe we talk about it regularly, and all the big picture things that we do, we're trying to frame them in terms of the mission statement. So this is where we're going, and this is how we want to go there. And then we can discuss Somebody can say, I don't agree that this is the way to get there, we should go this way. And this is where the healthy collaboration comes in. Eventually, as a group, we figure out this is precisely the way we want to go there. We can also discuss if there is the right target of where we actually want to go. Maybe we want to go a little bit further over there, and now we need a new approach to actually get there, and everybody agrees on that. But this all helps to align people. And people who don't agree with either the way you're getting there or the target where you want to go will leave the project, and that's a good thing. You shouldn't have people in the project who don't actually want to be there. And having being very open about the values and the direction of the project is a very good way of weeding these people out that will cause problems later. The most stereotypical reason for burnout is, of course, work overload, and I've identified two here. The one is systematic. Where you rely on people to do specific tasks within the project. For a long time, we had the release manager on CouchDB. Then they left. Then we didn't have releases for a while. This was really fun for both the person who dropped out and everybody else. So again, document everything, but especially make processes of everything that multiple people can do. And this is releases, how to do documentations, how to start the new internationalization language, how to do issue triaging, how to do user support, what's the language you use on the user's mailing list, how to do marketing, what's the model for figuring out what our mission statement is, a code review, everything else. My gold standard for this is, and we are not there yet, but what I want to see is things are so documented so well and so clearly that somebody who's new in the project on their first week, and say you are on timed releases, so every month you make a release, it's the week of the release, new person come in and makes the release because everything is so clear and accessible that they can just go do it. I think that should be totally possible. There's no technical reason for why that shouldn't happen. We're not there yet, but... we have a different model with Hoodie where we just release pretty much every commit, but it is not the, it's a different release model and we do different guarantees than with the ASF. It's good with the good thing about ideal goals. We'll never get there, but it gets better we can get closer every time. Other reason for work overload is self-inflicted, not systematic. So people who really care about CouchDB will work a lot on CouchDB. I've burned out a bunch of times on it. We've lost a few people around this. Some of them are back. If you have someone who's really diligent in contributing a lot, ask them. And if you can at all, because you now have a little bit more professional relationship with them, force them to take a break. Like if they work like nonstop for 3 months, just kick them out for a week. They'll love it when they come back, and you'll love it too, because if they're a prolific contributor and they continue to do like work every weekend and every workday on this, eventually they'll be gone and you can't afford to lose that person really, right? For them not taking a break. This is something that we learned from the PouchDB project. If necessary, reduce the scope of your project. With CouchDB, me personally, I'm very ambitious and I'm very impatient. It's a bad combination for leadership, but that's just who I am. I want a lot of things out of CouchDB, but the way we manage this now is we just have an ever-growing roadmap that we rejiggle every time we have a good new idea, but we know this is the main thing we can focus on right now, and we'll do this, and then we'll do the next big thing, and then we do the next big thing. If you try to do many things at once, or if you try to do too much at the same time, you won't get anywhere either, and people won't help either. This is the list from Kate. I have one more, microaggressions. These are the little things that you roll your eyes if they happen once or twice, but they will burn you out if you experience them constantly. And one of them I'll mention later. Next, have a friendly communication culture. In an earlier life, I was a member of the PHP community, especially in Germany. We had a PHP channel, php.de, and that was the time, the early 2000s, late 90s, when PHP, the common enemies were Java and Perl. So in IRC, you can ban people if they have bad behavior, and you can use regex for this. So we banned everyone star.pl, because that's all Perl scripts. So no Perl scripts could join the PHP channel. We thought that was funny. Turns out that's the top-level domain for Poland, so we banned all Polish people. I thought it was funny at the time, too. It's really embarrassing now. Went on to the PHP channel and the PHP diff channel on FNet, culture not a lot better. I want to say it's the PHP community is not all bad. I still have friends from these times, and it's all fine. But there's a culture of, at least in the early days, was of like we have to have common enemies, and there's this fighting and making fun of Java being slow and all that kind of stuff. And that just defined the culture of the whole thing. And when we started CouchDB, I didn't want that. And now in hindsight, I can see how it all worked out. But we got there by accident. In the first year or two, I was the one who replied to all the user emails. And since I wanted to have a nicer culture, I was just nice, empathetic, tried to help people as much as I can, be nice if they, or like try to be empathetic if what they wanted to do didn't work. And after a while, other people also started answering questions. And to my utter delight, they mimicked my style. So they were nice and friendly and like, oh, this is kind of cool, but I didn't realize at the time. Only had more responsibilities. I didn't have time to do user support anymore, but dropped in every once in a while, like years later, and people were still using like this friendly style that I kind of pioneered. And I thought, this was pretty cool. I have long-lasting cultural impact on this. So I accidentally got that right, but it's very important to look out for making this happen. Making the transition retroactively is a lot harder, but we don't always have a new project, so you have to do the hard work and getting there. The mantra for this is community is defined by the worst behavior that you tolerate. So if you have a culture where some people are just naturally snarky, and I know we have a bunch of those among the members, directors, and so on, which are one of the reasons why I'm staying out of these discussions most of the way. One of the things that we've adopted, and we've stole it from improv theater, is a culture of yes and. So if somebody comes up with an idea, we don't say, no, this is a bad idea because of these and these and these reasons, because that's really simple. It's a lot harder to say, this is a good idea, and here's a bunch of ways to improve it. Because it's really hard to find the core of an early draft of an idea, and it takes a lot of nurturing to get that idea to be the thing that it actually is. But if you work on it as a team, you'll get there, and you have a new good idea. Like, why shoot something down in the first place? But again, it's a lot harder. There's interesting cultural differences in this, and that's how I learned this year, like 15 years anniversary, and a 17 years anniversary in open source. Person in question is from Russia. I don't want to say this is everyone in Russia, but that's how that person was socialized. I spent a weekend, my own private time, to work on the CouchDB 2.0 website, put it up, and the first, and it was like I was like proud that I did this. I was like, okay, I'm spending time away from my partner to do this. I was proud to be able to do this. The first request that I get, remove that sentence. I'm like, what the f-? Like, no, this is great job. Thank you for doing this. Mind changing the thing? Or I think that sentence a little bit, like, no effort to improve, just remove the thing. And I blew a fuse. Like, I yelled at them. I was like, what the, literally. Then we talked it over in private. I apologized to blow a fuse in public. It was on the mailing list. And we talked about it. And it turns out, I suggested, like, here's how you could have said this. I could have said, I think that sentence should read this, or I think the sentence is better when we remove this sentence. Turns out, in their cultural context, saying, I think X should be Y means, I have this funny notion in my head that has absolutely no practical consequences to you. So, I think you should change this sentence means to them, good, okay, if that's what you think. Right? And if to us it means, would you kindly please, and here's my suggestion, and so on. So they have to say, change X to Y, and all we hear is, holy shit, that's pretty rude, what the f-, right? And that was, I've noticed that they are one of the people who respond to a lot of the pull requests we get for CouchDB, and it's usually one-liners, and it's usually a little bit snarky. I'm like, and I can take it one time, two time, three time, it doesn't bother me as much if I see it on other people. Happened to me a bunch of times, and that was the last time, and that was where this microaggression came together for me. So be diligent of figuring out where these are. Be very diligent about the cultural differences. Again, I don't want to say this is a cultural Russian-Western difference. The only way to get through this is to talk about these things and working on them together and learn and share these experiences and keep learning about them. All right, final stretch. There's a fantastic talk. I think you've all seen this. Google I.O. 2008, Open Source Project and Poisonous People by two of the leaders of the Subversion Project. Mantra is no one developer is more important than the project, and you can absolutely not afford to have assholes on the project. The cost to the project of not having people in the people not contributing because of the others is just too big. For us, we had a poisonous person on CouchDB. It took us 5 years to find them and to figure out that it was a poisonous relationship that we had, or abusive even, and then another year to put all the procedures in place to get rid of them. But we threw them out, and it was literally the hardest thing that I've done in open source ever. They're not shipping the 1.0 of CouchDB, not shipping the 2.0 of CouchDB, it's figuring out that we were in an abusive relationship with that one person and how to get rid of them. And they were a prolific contributor. They're really good programmers, really fun to work with them on technical stuff, if you agree. And that's it. And that wasn't worth it to us in this, in the end. So you lose people this way. You lose people by constantly talking about the alignment to the mission, because some people just leave you. Some people just leave you because they leave you. That's fine. So how do you keep, how do you stay alive as a project? Always be recruiting. This is not only for startups, but also for open source project. I'd also say, or I'd go so far as to say that this is the number one responsibility for anyone running an open source project. And again, recruiting means making it easy to onboard people, getting them in, so there's a lot of supplementary work to make this experience good and make it easy, but this is the number one priority. Also, always look for opportunities to get newcomers into the project. I have an example of this later. Specifically though, if you think, hey, we need people to do X, specifically reach out to the on social media or whatever channels you have for positions that you want to see filled. So last year we wanted to have an editorial team for Hoodie. So I wrote a job ad on GitHub. Said, here's what we want to do. Here's the thing that Hoodie does. We need more people that help us to tell the world about what we're doing. The team is going to be working on the blog, coordinating release notes, Twitter. You don't have to read all this. Coordinate with other people who do newsletter stuff. Work on our Tumblr. We have a really nice Tumblr where we have animals that are dressed, have like human clothes on them. It's really cute. So you get to run that one. List of perks. Like, what do you get for working on Hoodie? Working with nice people, great open source project, get to participate, like learn a lot about the open source model and everything. We'll send some people a bunch of swags that you can't buy anywhere. Here's what we need from you. Basically, if you roughly speak English and have half an hour a week time, that's kind of what's kind of the requirement we had. This is very important. The time one is very important for people. The single mother of two, if she's lucky, maybe have half an hour of spare time that she can work in open source for. If you don't make time for these people, you never get them. If you say, yeah, you got to be committed for a couple of hours per week, like not a lot of people can afford to do this. And again, you don't have to read all this. Here's how to apply. It's a job ad for an open source project. It had tremendous success. We had like 20 people signed up to like, hey, let's have the first call. Maybe 10 people stayed on after this. It narrowed down to 3 to 5 who then are now running the project. But I would never have imagined that we get 20 responses for like people running, like coming into like a Google Hangout to talk about maybe joining. That's fantastic. Another thing, starter issues, and other projects have done this in various forms. We've done this in the CouchDB Jira, have how hard is this level, and one of the for issues, and if there's a beginner level, it's like this is good for other people to get started on CouchDB. So we took this to a little bit of an extreme. With Hoodie, again, we explained the problem, what we want, and the steps to fix it. And this is, as you can tell, it's probably a tiny issue. And it would maybe take 5 minutes to fix it myself, but it also takes me 5 minutes to write this down. And now, if I fix it myself, the problem is fixed. If I write this down for someone else, they get to fix it, you get to review it. The next 5 minutes you spend is writing another one of those. Next thing you know, you have 10 of those, and all of a sudden, you're this 10x programmer that everybody's talking about, and all you do is reviewing code and getting more people into the project. It's really easy a way to scale your work. And you say, well, the 5 minutes are better spent fixing the thing, or it's really hard to make it very easy for these people, then you have to do the work to make it easy for the other people to make it, like, break down barriers for contribution to your project. And we've taken this a little further. This is a step-by-step checklist for every starter issue that we have. The first thing you have to do is claim the issue, like assign the ticket to yourself, basically. Set up a local repository for doing the development, and there's a link to a guide for how to do this. And the first time you do this, you have to write that guide, right? It's a little bit, it's a lot of work. But after that, all of this is just copy and paste. Start a pull request, adjust the test. So we teach them test-driven development first, so we might make the test first so that it fails, then you fix the test. Then you create the PR, here's the link to the commit message conventions, and here's how to reach out for people if you don't get a review, like that kind of stuff. So again, doing this once, it's probably an hour or two of work, but after that, it's just copy and paste. And it's so easy. Like, if you're really new, you say, oh, I've done this. It's really nice for people. Like, I don't have to explain checklists to you or why they're good. Out of this kind of work, a project called Your First PR emerged, done by Hoodie community member Charlotte Spencer. They set up yourfirstpr.github.io, and there are highlighting issues like the ones I just showed across all projects or all open source projects, and you specifically invite people to make their first contributions to Hoodie. I should have looked up the numbers, but I think we have about like 30 or 40 people that in 2016 have contributed to Hoodie as their first contribution to any open source project ever. This is a fantastic number, and Your First PR helps with this. Another thing is an initiative called First Timers Only by Kent Dodds. Where you mark not only issues as this is good for beginners, but only someone who has never contributed to this project can work on this. This is where we have a bit of a pipeline problem because we also need second timers only, third times only, and so on. And setting up a progression from getting someone in for the first time or submitting their first pull request to becoming a regular contributor, we haven't figured that one out. So if you have ideas for that, I'm all ears. Last one I want to talk about is meetups. Sometimes it's just worth sitting down with people and hold their hand until they make a pull request. I realize not every project can do this. We've done two in New York and one in Berlin. Not everybody lives in these places. Not everybody can get people together to work on this. But Hoodie is maybe five people part-time, and we have time to do this. We are lucky with the locations we are in, but maybe you can just find two people in your small town and you hold their hand until they have a pull request. It's a fantastic way to build up your community. Most of these people have a pull request in Hoodie now. Most of them have moved on to other open source projects because that's not their main focus, but now they're in open source. How great are we? This is really cool. So we hope other projects send people to us now. There are now generic versions of this for just any open source project and asking specifically, like I know about them in the JavaScript world, a bunch of projects collaborating on making starter issues just for these events, and then somebody runs, say Atlanta had one, lots of people of color there, which you usually don't see on these photos. Last two sentences I want to say, because I'm over my 30-minute limit. The people in this room and the people who work on open source who are here now usually have had the privilege to either put in the time or even get paid for learning all the skills to be in open source. Most people don't have that privilege, right? That is the reason why it's predominantly white and male. The solution to this is pretty straightforward. Pay them. Pay people who don't have the privilege to be in open source to be in open source. I know it's impossible for the ASF to do this, and Jim talked about this in the State of the Feather because of the type of incorporation the ASF has chosen to do, and I'm not saying the ASF should change this, but there's other organizations who help with the money bit. For example, Outreachy and a thing called Rails Girls Summer of Code, which is, despite the name, not only about Ruby on Rails. Hoodie has participated in Rails Girls Summer of Code 2 years in a row with great success. We have a total of 4 teams working on this, even though only 2 of them were ever paid to do the work. So you even get teams working on this that don't get paid to work on this. All of these are donation-driven, so ask your employers, please, to pay give money to Outreach your Rails Code Summer of Code so we can pay people to be in open source. Thank you very much. This is up for discussion. We have a couple more minutes, I think, and I'd love to hear from you about this. Thank you very much.
You talked about when you were sort of setting your sort of roadmaps and stuff for your community. So, and that you somebody put something down, and then it went back to the community for discussion. So that, in some communities, people think that, oh, the PMC must be doing this. The PMC should be driving all the strategies and initiatives, or an individual from the PMC should be driving it. Now, my thought is that it could be anybody from the community, just somebody that can do that. But what's your experience with CouchDB? Is it somebody from the community? Is it not the PMC, or is it the PMC?
So I agree with you that the PMC shouldn't do most of the things that, like, the dev list should do most of the things on the project, right? I think most of us agree on this one. Problem is, if you have a project where people are contributing a lot, you'll elevate them to the PMC. So even those things happen on the developer mailing list, they're usually driven by people who are committed to CouchDB so much that we have given them PMC status already. So this is where it's kind of self-defeating. And sometimes it's hard to push things back into the dev list because the PMC list is a safe space to a degree. So it's easier to, like, shoot ideas around and maybe not worry too much about being overly polite to someone, which you absolutely have to do on the developer list. Push things down, I would say, as much as possible. And if you end up in the situation where the PMC members, even on DevEd, drive most of the things, then that's just the way it is.
So how are you, within the, from your experience with Couch then, so how are you managing that, or dive how can I say it? You said that you've got the PMC, you've got quite a large PMC, and they're involved. I'm trying to say, how do you encourage the contributions from the community? Because sometimes if you've got a lot of active people that are either committers or PMC members, then the rest of the contributors tend to stay silent.
Yeah.
And they think, okay, this is being run by the committers or the PMC, and they don't really need me.
So one of the things that I'm doing, because I'm the longest active contributor in CouchDB, I'm the PMC chair, I'm Mr. CouchDB, basically. Everything I say, even though I don't want to, counts 10 times as much anybody else says. So I'm very conscientious about how I write my suggestions for things, and say, in my opinion, and I can be wrong, please correct me if I'm wrong, what are your ideas about that? Being very non-committal about the things that I suggest. Of course, they are well thought out. Like, I'm not a dummy, right? But I don't want to come in barging and say, this is the way it is. But this is also a skill that you need to learn. And this is maybe where it's a bit of a funny bit. I fail in public a lot. It's like, I don't know, here's the process for getting a new committer. And so I announce them in the board report, but they haven't actually agreed to be a committer yet. So it's announced in the board report that goes to the dev list, but the person isn't through the process yet. And that happened to me this year. So there's a whole lot of things that I don't deliberately get them wrong, but I hope that shows people that I'm, like, not some uber person.
Any other questions? No? So
discussion
please.
Points? Huh? Anything we can talk afterwards, it doesn't have to be on mic. Sure. Thank
please
you very much
here.
Again.